And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, we've had kind of a goofy day here in Illinois, and the sun has just came out, so we're going to take off and have a good time. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I've got a good friend that I've known for over 30 years. He's a real American patriot. He's an incredible conservationist. He's a businessman, everything else. He's been helping the troops. I don't know what else to say about him. Mark, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Well, thank you very much. And when it comes to Illinois, the corn is up and the tassels are out, and my allergies are off the charts as well.
Yeah.
So I'll apologize early.
Yeah, we're just literally, Mark and I are not that far apart from where we're at right now, so we've known each other. I mean, Mark's been involved in so many things. Mark, as your conservation work, you've been out there, you've been teaching kids how to shoot, how to hunt, how to work out in the fields. You've done that for years and years and years on your own farm, haven't you?
Yeah, I put a youth camp together, and it's a conservation camp with a dose of reality. We emphasize hunting and fishing's role in conservation, which most people are just unaware of. And it's really the thread that holds it together in this country. It's called the North American Wildlife. What's the last word of that? It's not program, but basically in North America, the way it works is it's our hunting and fishing licenses and permit fees that we as hunters and fishermen invest into the system that pays for the DNR. It pays for all the wonderful programs. I'm sure most people have heard of Pheasants Forever, National Wild Turkey Federation, Whitetails Unlimited, and on and on and on. And it's our money that generates all these great programs to expand wildlife.
Yeah, you've been doing that for a long time. And I know you've been a businessman you and I met many, many years ago. You've been a businessman where you had a hobby shop, you had a pro archery shop where you did all the stuff with archery and everything else. And one thing was always neat, especially, boy, now for what, 10 or 13 years, you've always had a gigantic American flag flying across your shop as much as possible.
Well, I sure did a whole lot back in 2003 when the war was breaking out. We ended up having the anti-war, anti-racist effort from the University of Illinois show up protesting in front of my business, and we put together a pro-America rally back in the day, and we flew, I think, 3 60-foot flags every Saturday, and we built quite a 12 weeks worth of rallies, over 2,000 people the last 2 or 3 weeks, and yeah, that was quite a time back then.
Yeah, we've been doing so much of that stuff. I mean, you and I have been friends for so many years, I can't even begin to understand when we all met together. It was way back at the old shop. But all this stuff again, again, you've been leading the charge. I know you and I are both on the radio locally here all the time, and we have a lot of fun with a good friend of ours in a local radio station on talk radio show. he's never quite sure what's going to happen when you and I call in, because both of us are calling in, and when we call in, I know he's got used to the fact, well, all the documentation, all the information shows up a few days before we show up.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how some people just don't want to hear the truth.
Yeah, and so, I mean, your whole area of a patriot, I mean, you and I became good best friends because of that, the fact your patriotism and everything else. And led you into that? I mean, you're a businessman. Your primary job is you have to sell your products in order to keep your business. But the products you've been selling, I mean, you've been helping schools all over this area for a long time. I mean, when I was a school teacher, we came out there. We're doing the rocket stuff in the grade schools. You're providing, helping us with all that stuff, all the conservation effort. What led you into this whole dream of conservation and patriotism and businessmen? And
well, I guess I can say the Lord works in mysterious ways. You know, and when one looks at one's foundation, I'm a Christian, and that's played a heavy role in the decisions I made in life. But I go back to, you know, my grandfather, he had papers to drive the biggest ships in the Pacific. He had a number of them disabled, and in fact, he was blown out of the bridge into the ocean and was the only one picked up out of the crew that was in the bridge at the time. And, you know, my dad was 20 years in the Air Force, spent time in Korea. My father-in-law was 20 years in the Air Force, spent time in Vietnam. My brother-in-law, he's a 3-star in the Air Force. My stepbrother was awarded the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, and about every award there was in the early days of Afghanistan. So I have this historical basis when it comes to military service, though I never myself joined up. It was never pressured to me. I never saw a reason to. You know, my dad used it. It was a great tool for him to go and get his feet in the ground into the business. You know, my dad, he was an airplane nut, and his dream when he got out of the Air Force was to start a hobby shop. In fact, if you've ever been to Grand Tool, Chanute Air Force Base, that was my father's store, first store out the main gate.
Yeah, the one where that was the first time when I came through here. I mean, we were all young puppies at that time.
Well, my dad started that business when I was in first grade, and I went through high school. You know, I was raised in that store, and that's where I learned retail. And, you know, my mother said, Tommy, your son can do whatever he wants to do. Don't push him. I never dreamed of getting in the hobby business, but 2 years of college and a wife and a kid, and I needed to make money, and I ended up buying another hobby shop. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, that the hobby shop out there was almost like – almost like a Western building where you came right out of the gate. I mean, Chanute Air Force Base back at that time when I came through here the first time, I mean, after I came back from Vietnam in 1971 and had friends here and then ended up, you know, marrying a local girl that you already knew. But anyhow, I mean, it was just kind of right out the gate and was right there on the east side of the road. And it was kind of a hidden secret because at that time when you're growing up and your father was your father was instrumental in this, Chanute Air Force Base was a part of the community, and it did not have a strip. There were no strip bars. There were no bars. There were none of this stuff. No, nothing or anything like you would find a normal military installation. You came out, and here was a hobby shop, and there was a restaurant, and then you were into the town.
There was a head shop back in the day, and there was a bookstore, if you will. And that was it as far as vice, other than freelance workers. But what was great, you know, when you're the first door out the main gate of this base, and there wasn't much to do in Rantoul, you know, face it, it was a lucrative situation for my family. Those guys every 2 weeks had a paycheck. They rolled off. And, you know, hobbies, it was a hobby business, and hobbies are a great thing. You know, and a lot of guys, when they're only 18, 19 years old, if they hadn't been exposed to it, it was very easy to get them involved. And it was a good thing to be involved with.
Yeah, because it was a lot of fun stuff, everything building models and, you know, and everything. And then all the train stuff. I know my house is full of train stuff that we got from your store, both in Rantoul and both of them. And now, it's the third one down there in Champaign now that you've had.
Yeah, and we branched out into archery, and that's how I got into conservation. I bought some hunting ground. And then I decided it was a big piece of ground, and it was a total waste for me to have this 100 acres of ground that all I did was hunt it with some friends. And I decided in the off season, why not turn it into a camp and bring kids in? In fact, I had a nonprofit, Team Wildlife USA, and I was trying to encourage other landowners throughout the country to look at the asset they have in that ground and then solicit some help from these organizations like Whitetails Unlimited or National Turkey Federation and say, you know what, I got the ground, you got the manpower, why don't you guys do programs on my property? Because it's so logical. But it was a very difficult thing to get off the ground. I was amazed at the roadblocks that came up. But that's what I did, and it worked great here. In fact, I had a real heck of a camp going. I had the DNR involved doing wing shooting clinics, and they were coming out for four events a year. We were putting on three. So, I mean, we were doing something every weekend. And then as I got really political over Bill Ayers, I started make my face real known. The DNR walked away from me because we're in the state of Illinois, and it's run by Democrats. And at that point, the guy who was running the DNR program said, you know what? This doesn't look good on me. I could get in trouble. And he actually dropped the whole ball, and that was a lot of big events. It was kind of what was the backbone of where we were going. So that's where the politics actually got in the way of the business.
You know,
and it wasn't really a business. I never made a dime off of it. That was never the goal.
Yeah, well, I mean, that whole conservation effort, you were teaching kids and everything else. But the politics and the freedom of expression, the freedom of thought, and trying to sustain the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, I mean, you've been doing that for a long time, and that interferes with everything. And, I mean, Bill Ayers, being as though I was at the University of Illinois, and Bill Ayers somehow got to the University of Illinois, unfortunately, but then he also got into position. I think we need to go back to the Vietnam era to understand who Bill Ayers was and what he was involved in. I know in my own personal connection, not with him, but a family friend that you and I have discussed that didn't know better and got linked up with him, and it turned out a disaster for her all the way around. But this turned out to be a complete disaster for the nation and continues to be so, doesn't it?
Oh, horrible. If people understood the actual power level that Bill Ayers controls, and then correlated that with his mind and what he believes in and what he has worked his entire life for, then they'd understand who Obama is. And then they'd be saying, wait, we must stand up and do something now before it's too late.
They were somewhat connected. Well, I mean, during the Vietnam War, Bill Ayers is involved in some of the most horrible events. How many buildings and structures did they attack?
Well, the Weather Underground, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, this was the Weather Underground. He led the Weather Underground with Bernadine Dorn, who ended up being his wife and ended up being professors. But the mindset in the anti-war, the anti-Vietnam, the anti-military stuff is just staggering. And then he became a university professor at the University of Illinois in Chicago.
And has dedicated his life to revolution. You know, he claims to be a small C communist, but that's a total crock. He is as big a C communist as there is in the world. And he's a violent revolutionary communist, and that's important for people to understand. You know, Larry Graffel, who just died this past week, was the FBI informant who was in on the meeting when you got, I think it was around 30 of these grad students discussing, you know, if our revolution works, what are we going to do with all these patriots? And the answer was to kill 25 million of them. You know, those who couldn't be re-educated would be killed, and that's 25 million was their guesstimate. Well, that was 10% of the population, so today that would be 33 million is their guess. So when we see all these things popping up that alarm people like these FEMA camps, there's a lot of truth to that, and there's a good reason for people to be very, very concerned or prepared. You need to be concerned, and I think being concerned puts you in a position to prepare wisely, and that's what I promote. You know, educate other people, get more people involved on our side of the fence, and prepare wisely so when the day comes down and it becomes obvious, then the response needs to happen.
Well, I mean, these guys were involved, the Weatherman Underground. How many buildings did they bomb and attack? And they set up everything, the 1968 convention, which had every intention of a violent overthrow and a violent confrontation because of the fact that I knew somebody was involved in that.
Oh, yeah, and that was their goal. They were literally working to overthrow the government. That was their target. It wasn't just a case of throwing up protests. They had an end game they were working toward. It might have been a little unreasonable at the time, but they regrouped. That's the thing that people should understand. These people had an agenda back then. They realized what they did wrong. They were all in education, grad students in education, and they immediately set out to change the world through the educational system. I mean, here's a caveat. Most people don't know this, but this is the truth, that at least it was up till 2 months ago. Bill Ayers was, and to my knowledge still is, the vice president of curriculum studies of the American Education Research Association. What does that mean? That means the AERA is the largest organization of its kind in the United States. There's 25,000 professors and research students involved in this organization, and Bill Ayers leads curriculum, and his influence is from pre-K to post-grad. So we know who Bill Ayers is, and we wonder why our students are so dumb, why they don't talk or teach any constitutional studies anymore. It's been reduced to almost being negligible. You know, why the gay agenda has been thrust into the kindergarten, first grade, second grade level. I mean, it's absurd that this is the reality in the United States of America today.
Yeah, and when we look at all the stuff that's happening, and this is frightening to me as a veteran and a peace advocate and the whole thing, working this whole thing, and I've got so many multiple hats on, and you and I have discussed this over the last 30-odd years. It's just weird to figure out where you're coming from and where I'm coming from at any given time. But we have to remember that there's a real serious challenge, I mean a real serious challenge to the Bill of Rights. We're looking at freedom of speech and freedom of expression, freedom of the press. We absolutely know that the CENTCOM engagers are out there to put disavow and put information out there. We absolutely know that media and press have incredible pressures put against them. The IRS has been totally involved in everything. We know that the media is being monitored. We know that mail is being monitored. We know that phone calls and emails are being monitored. And all this stuff is on the agenda. I mean, you've discussed this for a long, long time. It's been on the agenda and is slowly creeping in without people being aware of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't really know your base of listeners here. I don't know how informed they are.
Well, this is it's all military. So we're talking to veterans and people in the military. They don't necessarily, some will, but they don't necessarily have the strong educational foundations and background, because we're aiming at veterans and people in the military. So this is a whole new area for them.
Yeah, in essence, it's a cross-section of our society. So there are people out there listening right now who are uninformed, and there's those ill-informed. When I run into somebody, and this is my standard spiel anymore, I just throw out, you are aware that the United Nations was created by our government in 1945. Okay, fact. You are aware that 3/4 of the men on that committee that created the UN were Soviet sympathizers or outright communists. Truth. You are aware that in 1961, the United States State Department wrote a paper called Freedom from War, which was the plan to disarm all the world's people and militaries and transition to a one-world government through the United Nations. And they wrote the plan for the UN to implement. And anybody can Google it. It's called Freedom from War. And when you read it, and it's a fairly short document, 20 minutes worth of reading, you'll get the gist of it. And at the end of it, there's a summary. Basically, what they're saying is, here's the way you disarm the world. And they talk about nuclear. It gets down to all conventional weapons, too. The ultimate goal is to disarm everyone, transition to one world government through the UN, America would be gone now. The America we know as a republic is no longer in existence. There would only be enough weapons left in each nation state for a police state to, evolve. The whole goal would be a police state in every nation state to squelch any local insurrection. And that's what we have today through all these SWAT teams that were built up through the war on drugs. We're on the precipice of their plan being finalized, and we're seeing it more and more every day. And more information, thank God for this Internet. There's just so much knowledge that can be found from it as people put more and more into it. So anyway, you've got a United Nations that's controlling the world right now. We fund it pretty much, and in this Freedom from War document, they basically state that we, American citizens, will transition to international law. So whatever the UN deems law, we have to live by. Most people have heard about this small arms treaty. You know, that's a UN treaty to be imposed on us.
That's frightening.
To affect our Second Amendment rights. Now, this is where it gets plain transparent as can be. That statement in 1961, Freedom from War, was tyranny. Our government is giving up on the republic for a new world order. They're destroying this nation in order to achieve that end. That's tyranny. And ever since then, and before then actually, our government has been involved in tyranny. It's nothing but treason and tyranny. And we stand, and you know, we the people, just like in the last revolution, we have pretty thick skin up to a point. And I'm afraid there's only one way this is headed, because you and I know what it means to be a military man and a patriot if you're an informed one. It means you can't allow this to happen in our home ground.
Yeah, one of the things that's frightening, I guess, and this goes back with President Obama, and a lot of people got taken in as things started moving around, but the money man behind all of this stuff is a guy named George Soros.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure people are aware of that, because when I got working with Obama when he was both the Illinois senator running for the Illinois Senate, and I met all those guys. And then he started running for president and working with those guys. And we were trying to put, I mean, you were helping me. We were trying to get technical advice to him and actual information to sustain everything, because a lot of people were suckered in not realizing what's going on. So as my understanding, and maybe you can verify this, I'm getting across to George Soros as a money man behind Obama, and then all the stuff with the UN and the arms control and the arms agreement, everything else. I mean, it says, well, we're not going to do anything, but it's, you know, directly right out there, suspend our Bill of Rights. So you see everything that's happening, and it just is frightening beyond comprehension.
Oh, it is. It is. You know, as a Christian, I believe what the Bible states, and the Bible prophecy, you know, I spend a lot of time on the internet reading things, and Bible prophecy fits like a glove over current events right now. And basically, the big ones are one world government, one world religion, and one world economic system. Well, if you pay attention to what the Federal Reserve is doing to the dollar right now, they're destroying it. It's being done intentionally. The dollar has always held the reserve currency for the world because of its because of the oil trade. And many nations are going away from the dollar now. And as soon as we hit that tipping point and the dollar is no longer the viable reserve currency, the dollar will just go kaboom. And all of a sudden, it is not worth the paper it's printed on. And that could happen very soon. You know, we look what's going over in Europe, and we see the extreme financial issues over there. We know what's going on here, although we're in a situation, as they are really, because they can print money in a lot of the European Union. Here, we just print more money. So it just it puts it off, but it makes the fall greater when it comes. They're milking the life out of everybody right now, and that's by design. These people are you know, back in the day, in the 30s, during the Depression, there was long bread lines. You could see this. Everybody was hurting. They didn't have it. They had to wait in line. Today, they get a link card, just run through Walmart. So you don't see the fact that, what, 50 million people depend on the government now for their food? Could you imagine that bread line?
You know, and the thing that's frightening on this is, and I don't even know where to begin to describe this, because we're in a small town here. But that desire, the independent capabilities, the independent desire to take individual responsibility, to do the best that you can, seems to be disappearing, because there's been this effort or whatever to make so many people dependent upon them, and then the individuals have allowed that dependency to occur, that the individual capability or insight or whatever the desire to do something for themselves, to better themselves, seems to be lacking in a whole large portion of the population.
Well, yeah, it is. And, you know, I've always said the foundational principle in conservatism is freedom, which is the cornerstone within the foundation of America. So you got life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, property rights, inalienable rights, and opportunity are the building blocks that made America great. But it's personal responsibility. That's the mortar that holds this whole foundation together, and that's what's been wiped out. How can you have a country when no one's responsible? When I say no one, that's an exaggerated number, but it's getting worse and worse. And, you know, one more generation of kids, which I don't know if we have that long, and we're past the tipping point where people even understand what it means to be self-sufficient, you know, and have that responsibility. And again, what's that go back to? Bill Ayers, you know, and his role in education, teaching teachers. It's appalling what's gone down.
I know one of the new professors at the U of I that's kind of taken the lead along with Bill Ayers for AERA. I mean, she came up and she had a position paper from the University of Illinois on taking away the guns and how dangerous they are and all this kind of stuff. This came out like almost last December and everything. And then she was talking about everything and how she was going to change the educational program and change the curriculum and do all this stuff. And so I said, okay, wait a minute. You know, I went to the U of I, got my doctorate in education at the U of I, physics, technology, education. We had the same professor. She's new there. I mean, I've been gone for a long time, you know. So anyhow, I emailed her and called her up. Well, there was never any response whatsoever to any of the thoughts or the ideas or, you know, suppositions that I was coming up or observations. It was kind of like, well, this is what we're going to do, and I'm going to ignore anything else that's outside that because our agenda is this. And it was frightening. It truly is frightening to see that being placed in, because the new young kids coming through the system don't have the experience. They don't have the knowledge. You've got a whole group of teachers now that are putting things in there that don't have the wherewithal or the concern. I guess what you call it, red, white, and blue patriotism and sustaining, you know, all of the American rights. It just doesn't seem to be happening. And then when you get in the educational system, that stuff that we were taught about American history and everything else and taught about out and how do we do individual responsibility seems to be missing out of the curriculum.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're 17, 18 years old. You've gone through high school. You think you're smart. And you are to some degree. You've learned a lot, or at least back in our generation. And then you go into this college atmosphere, and you're basically this young, impressionable mind that these teachers want to take and mold. And they do. They brainwash them today, and they're very, very good at it. And it's very subtle. Most propaganda and brainwashing is done very slowly over time, and it's just you slowly mold it into what you want it to be. And they become professionals at it. Here's another thing that's interesting that most people don't know. There are 500 liberal residential learning centers in the United States of America. Here at the University of Illinois is Unit 1, called Allen Hall. At this building, it is a liberal residential learning center. Predominantly 80% of it would be freshmen and sophomore. They come in, and that's where they live. And that's where a lot of their core courses are taught. And certain ones are mandatory. And a lot of times they use small groups like Bill Ayers pushes. And they'll have 10 kids in a room. And there'll be one senior in there. And she kind of, or he guides the class. And this is where the brainwashing is happening, because this kid has already been brainwashed. So he gets in there and they just talk about things. It's open discussion. But you've got somebody who's kind of suggesting this and suggesting that, and they've gotten very good at it.
Well, they'll guide the conversation, the discussion, along the path that they want without anybody being aware of the guidance happening. I mean, Bill Ayers was a visiting scholar at Allen Hall Unit 1.
Right. Well, that's where I went. He was a guest in residence, and that's another factor or function of these liberal residential learning centers is they bring in guests in residence. They bring in big names like Bill Ayers and Patch Adams and people of that nature, which generally these kids are clueless to who they are. So they write up a resume for the kids to look at, and obviously very glorified who they are. These people are always personable. They live with them for a week. They hang out. They eat meals. They go to the lectures. You know, they develop a rapport because, you know what, Doug, you're a great guy. You know, you're fun to be around. You know, I bet you're right. You know, in fact, I believe what you say because you're such a nice person. Another type of subtle brainwashing.
I think what was frightening with Bill Ayers and Allen Hall in Unit 1 is the kids that were there had absolutely no idea of his involvement, okay, during the Vietnam War and all of the crimes that were, you know, I mean, literally treason that was involved in that time. I mean, literally, you know, designing and blowing things up and attacking things and everything else. And I found it real interesting because you and I had discussed this at this time when it was happening, and you were leading the charge out there. But these kids, it was not even brought up, had no idea who he really was and what he was involved in. It was, well, he's a university professor. He's coming in to discuss. These are what he's involved with. And nothing about the past or what his agenda is or anything else. So all this stuff was just washed away as if, well, it's not important. We're not going to tell the kids what's really going on.
Yeah.
What happened when you confronted Bill Ayers?
Well, basically it was four nights of lectures in the evening, about an hour lecture, and then there'd be a question and answer period afterwards. So every night I was there in line, and I had a lot of fun with him. You know, first question I asked him is, do you believe in God? He said no, with no hesitation. And I told the kids, I said, pay attention, because this is what all your professors are going to tell you, because you're not allowed to believe in God in a communist society, and this man is working towards a communist society. So I made that point very clear. Second night, I had about a five-minute lecture, or not lecture, but I had a chance to speak for 5 minutes, at which if you Google Bill Ayers meets the new activist, you can see that at the end of that, it's worth watching to the end, because I give Bill something he's never had in his life, and I really don't want to repeat it on this show, but it's worth watching. Like I said, Bill Ayers meets the new activist. And then on the last night, I decided it was time to get arrested. So he did his lecture, and the question and answer period started, and I kind of hopped up, and I had a Bible in my left hand and a copy of Atlas Shrugged in my right hand. And I was sitting in the third row just towards the end. I got up, and I walked around to the podium, you know, and I'm 6'5 and about 230, and it was wintertime, and I had a big, heavy coat on, so I was kind of imposing. And Bill's kind of a little guy, and it happened when I stood up. He turned his back to get a drink of water, and about the time I got to where he was, he turned around, and I was within about 5 feet of him with my hands held up holding these two books. And I wish I had a picture of the look on his face, because he about did. So anyway, the police, by that time, the first night there was one undercover cop there, which, if you watch that video and you see the guy come in and take the mic, that was an undercover cop that I wasn't aware of at the time. But by the time the last lecture, there was four or five uniformed cops there. They did not like what I was doing. In fact, I started taking it to the Board of Trustees. In fact, if you Google YouTube Mark Thompson and the Board of Trustees at the U of I give a five-minute speech about how bad Bill Ayers is and what he is, and that he really needs to be investigated for academic misconduct. And it was the first session this Board of Trustees had ever had, because the last one got dismissed for doing bad things. So brand new board, and the new board chairman is Chris Kennedy, which is Robert Kennedy's son. So I put it on their plate and said, right now, this is the most important thing this board could ever do when it comes to saving this country. I pointed out who Bill Ayers was, that he was a professor. He needs to be investigated for academic misconduct, hoping that would lead to the truth of who he is. And this was during the election cycle, when he's saying he barely knew Barack. So, I got arrested there that night when I approached the podium, and all charges were dismissed. I got a mug shot, and I'd like to get a copy of it just for posterity.
It's real interesting because, you know, involved in the community, we've been teaching and working. We work with all of these guys on a regular basis and know them on a first-name basis. But all of it did come down again, obviously, you know, Bill Ayers. And, I mean, you did turn the Board of Trustees around. They refused to give him Professor Emeritus. I mean, you had the media, local media, even got turned around to where they were going, Mark was right. Mark was right.
Yeah, I was persistent, and I dogged him hard. We did a sit-in at the president's house over the deal, and the editor to the local paper emailed me and said that my actions had a whole lot to do with the final outcome when it came to Bill Ayers and his emeritus status.
Yeah, I know. When John came down to, you know, basically give you credit for all of this stuff, it was kind of like, well, Mark was right.
I was the local guy in on it. You know, luckily, you had all your other big talk radio show people really dogging Ayers. So I was able to keep the pressure on them locally while the national media was doing their thing. So I think it was a little bit of everything. I really blew it, though, at that board meeting. If I was thinking, or I shouldn't say that, but I wish at the end of it I would have said, and you know, Mr. Kennedy, in Bill Ayers' book, it says he dedicated this book to the man who shot your father. I wish I would have had that, because that would have been golden.
Yeah, because, you know, yeah, well, what can you say about that? it's frightening to have all this information, you know, and whatever. So with all the stuff that's happening, and it gets to be frightening, I mean, we do absolutely have control of the media and the press. We've got control of TV. I mean, it happened on July 4th. We were getting ready for the, I mean, I'm just getting ready for the go on the parade and the veterans float here in the Rantoul 4th of July parade. And as we went over to get in line for the parade, it came out on the radio that they were confirming that they had been monitoring all U.S. mail. In other words, when your mail, you send a letter at mail, it's monitored who's it's going to. We know that that's being done with the Internet. We know that's being done on the telephone. You and I are both monitored all the time. Not a surprise for us.
But no, not at all.
How can we make people more aware of what's happening out so that they stand up to enforce the Constitution of the United States, enforce the Bill of Rights, get our leaders that are already sworn to comply and uphold and sustain? How do we get that awareness out there? How do we get more and more people involved to do what's right, just simply do what's right?
As a strategy war gamer, from that mentality, you got to look at where you are on the field and what the objective is. You know, and for me, my view on this is, as a Christian, I know where it goes. You know, I trust the infallible word of the Bible. And it says it's going to be ugly. In fact, half the world's population will be killed. You know, I don't think that we can stop it as a whole, especially when you take the other facts, like six corporate conglomerates own 7,500 of the media outlets in this country. Virtually everything is owned by six entities. They control the media, and we see it. Well, let's talk Trayvon Martin. Let me throw this out there. Well, let me go to Trayvon in a minute. So anyway, my point is, I don't think we can stop it because they control the media, they control the government, they control education, they control the churches, they control the courts. They have control. And again, Khrushchev said it back in the day that they would never fire a shot and take control of the country, and they've done it. They sent their people into this nation long ago, and they control what matters, all those positions of power and influence in those areas. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't think the political situation can be controlled. In fact, we know the vote is corrupted. So if all you've got is the vote and it's corrupted, how can you control it? That's why I promote the concept of educate others, prepare wisely, and network with like-minded people. Be ready. You know, don't be a lone person. But getting down to, you know, the media control, this Trayvon Martin thing, because it is relative here when it comes to the media. Look at the narrative they put out. He's a 14-year-old boy. He's so innocent looking. There he is on a horse. There he is with his dad kissing him. You know, all these really positive pictures of this young Trayvon, the poor boy who was murdered by George Zimmerman. They didn't even once touch the narrative that came out that was restricted by the actual prosecution of this case, because the phone record of Trayvon's cell phone told a totally different narrative. That was the 17-year-old, the thug, the guy with the gold grill, which is gold teeth all across the front, the guy flipping people off in his phone, the kid who was making notes about a drink called Lean. And this is what will blow your mind, because I'll bet you about no one in your listening group knows this. Google Lean, L-E-A-N. What is that? That's a drug concoction that is hot these days, where they take a bottle of codeine, mix it with Sprite or perhaps Arizona watermelon drink, and Skittles, and sip on it for a period of time, not too quick. And it's called the poor man's PCP. And it's been well proven, because going back to 2011 on those phone records, there's Trayvon talking about it, saying how he's going to quit smoking dope because he didn't want to be roped, which meant if you get caught with weed, you get thrown in jail. But if you got a drink on you, you don't get thrown in jail. So he's talking about it in 2011. And the basis to this codeine-based drink is it creates a psychosis. If you drink enough of it, you become psychotic. You become agitated and aggressive. So we go back to the 17-year-old narrative of a thug who is drinking this
narcotic drink, who's been involved in 3 fights and expelled from school. At that very school, he was caught with a bag that had marijuana residue. But in the process of that search, they find in his backpack a very large screwdriver used for burglaries and a whole bunch of women's jewelry and a watch that was not talked about in that trial. And the prosecution kept all that information from the defense. That's a media that is controlled. That's a court system that is controlled. You know, it's amazing. Just amazing.
And then you've got individuals that are jumping on the bandwagon that do not have access to information, or they don't want to go get the information. And then if the information is presented to them, because it disrupts their mindset or brainwashing, they don't want to accept the information that's coming out. I mean, that's this whole thing all tied all together, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the normalcy bias. And it's like, why is Trayvon important? Well, you had Fast and Furious, and we were catching in a ton of lies, but boom, there's another event. I think there was one, and then there was Benghazi. And right behind Benghazi is the IRS, and then there's the NSA. And now you got Trayvon. And it's like overwhelming the system. you can't keep up with it. And they're able to kind of put it off, get it off the radar, and walk away from it. I mean, what, last Friday, 2 weeks ago? Obama does an executive order, says he can take control of all communication now. You know, that went by, and few people saw that, by executive order. You know, people, we get an
people are not aware of presidential decision directives or executive orders, the fact that they're above all court control, they're above all legislative control, they're just fiats by design that they can do anything they want with absolutely no controls, and there's a lot of them out there.
And they're egregious. The idea that your government today has written through the Natural Resources Preparedness Act, which started back in Kennedy's day, and every year or every 4 years it's brought up again and they refine it. But at the end of the day, they've given themselves the legal authority to confiscate every single thing you own, whether it be food or fuel, your vehicles, your home. They also have given themselves the legal authority to take you and put you in a work camp. Now, how can our government in this republic literally make slaves of everyone and confiscate everything they own?
Well, these are presidential decision directives number 39, number 62, and number 51, just 3 of them, much less all the other ones. But, it's an agenda, and it seems to be hidden, and people aren't aware of it, or if they become aware of it, it takes quite a while to do this. But, I mean, you do a lot more than just talk about, discuss, and educate. I mean, you're actually totally involved also in the Christian Emergency Preparedness Network, aren't you?
Yep. That's an organization a friend of mine and I have put together.
Could you describe what that is and how people can get information on the website? Because this is essential for everybody.
Well, the concept behind this is we want people to network in their community. So when I talk about educate others, prepare wisely, and network, the idea is your church, and we're not limited to churches, but churches make a lot of sense because they're already existing in almost every community. There's a series of churches. So you've already got this body of people. And a lot of people see what's going on. I mean, when I'm done with church, there's as many people standing around after church talking about politics as there is anything going on, because there's so much stuff going on. Once a week you catch up on it, you can barely even keep up once a week. So the concept is you go to your church. In fact, we suggest you go to the pastor and say, you know what, there's a lot of interesting things happening when it comes to what's happening with current events and Bible prophecy. And as the shepherd of your flock, we think you should probably bring this to people's attention, because, you know, there's an awful lot of people who watch ABC, CBS, and MSNBC, and they don't have a clue to the truth of what's going on in the world today.
What's real interesting with the major networks, if you listen to a newscast on one, go to the other, it's as if the same person wrote the script for each one of them. It's astonishing, and I find people don't even pick up on that.
Again, when you've got 6 conglomerates controlling 7,500 different mechanisms, they can easily do that, you know, with today's email And I'm sure they
do. Go on about the Preparedness Network and education. I mean, you guys have workshops. You hold preparedness fairs. You've got stuff online. Talk about this. How can people get to it, and what can they use it for?
You know, I don't want to apologize too much for my website. The other fellow put it together, and it was old software, but it's CEPN.us, Christian Emergency Preparedness Network.us. And on that website, you can get the gist of what we're trying to do, and that is to get you to go to, for you to become the champion and go to your pastor and say, you know what, here's where we are. Would you talk about it from the pulpit? Should we? Can we do something from our church? Do we want to put a pantry in at our church, for instance? You know, have him urge the people in that flock that great wisdom would be to have a month or two or three or four worth of food in your pantry at home. Because if everybody in the church actually built up their pantry, that church is a solid church at that point. They can help other people in case of an emergency. Maybe the church could afford to put some money into, you know, long-term storage foods for in the event of something really bad. They could have their own bread line, soup line, and they can do it right now cheap. And, you know, long-term storage foods, 25 years.
Yeah, so you're doing food storage, you're doing sanitation, you're doing water preparation, you're doing first aid.
Yeah, we put an expo together, and we've got all the information on our site you can download. So that you could do an expo in your area. An expo is nothing, you know, we just did one. It was real simple. It was actually inside the hobby shop on the archery range. And I think there was 11 or so standard tables, and every one was a different topic, whether, like you say, sanitation, first aid, food storage, you know, the list goes on. And it's really simple to be prepared, especially if you just give it a little thought and do it before the crisis comes. Most people have 50% of what you need at home already. But if the lights go out, can you find it? To start with, is the flashlight handy? You know, do you have extra batteries? A lot of people right now are saying, ooh, good point.
What is that website again, Mark? Real slow for everybody.
CEPN.us.
Okay. Christian Emergency Preparedness Network.us. So, yep. I mean, a whole bunch of different stuff here. Again, ladies and gentlemen, what we're doing is providing knowledge, we're providing information, we're providing education, we're providing resources, stuff that you need to go and look for, you need to find out about, you need to take individual responsibility to take action and prepare. Again, that's what this is all about, whether you're a veteran or not, especially with the veterans. You guys got the key education and the training to help take forward on this, don't they, Mark?
Absolutely. And they, you know, my concern with what's coming down the pike is we need the military. We need our guys on our side, because what's coming down the pike is not a traditional red, white, and blue American government. Well, martial law is what they're talking. And we just saw it in Boston. So it's not that far-fetched. I know a lot of people live in this world of normalcy bias, and they're not seeing what's going on. And I can understand it. You know, my father's 84, and he sees an awful lot, but, you know, he doesn't see the need to really prepare like he should. And it scares me because he needs it more than I do in some respects. You know, medication's a big one. But networking's the ticket, in my opinion. You know, find other people. Find out who's thinking like this and learn more and draw more people into your network so that when things do get crazy, we're in a position to act. And, again, getting back to the military, guys, if you know people in the military, you got to warn them and tell them what's happening is not constitutional. Posse comitatus is quite obvious. Why in the world are we basically have a military police force now? You know, the whole no-knock raids? 15 guys in a row, they bust down the door, they come in, they throw a flashbang grenade with fully automatic rifles. That's not a protect and serve force. That's a police state force.
Well, you've got the other same thing. Again, we come back down to the orders to use the Buck Rogers ray gun on civilians that are disruptive or anything. I mean, these are actual Department of Defense written directives. And it's frightening to see that put into place because, you know, when you first run across it and you see it, and then you have to stop and say, wait a minute, what's going on? But then the average person, they don't even want to believe that these things exist.
Well, I know that there's an armored personnel vehicle in the armory in Urbana, and all the, Homeland Security ordered 2,500 of them a year ago, and they're all coming in to bear. You know, every year they're getting a few more. They requisitioned 2,500. But all of those can be fitted with water cannons and ray guns or beanbag guns or whatever they want to stick on one of those, they can stick on one of those. And that's pretty scary when you think you've got a machine that a standard civilian can't do a thing about. And turn on the TV, look at Europe. They're doing it. I'd hate to get hit by one of those water cannons.
Yeah, I know when I brought this up with the individuals that are getting, you know, storing this equipment and everything, and it was almost like you're talking to a brick wall because they don't understand the actual hidden agenda, I don't think. They think, well, we're just following along the preparations and everything and where it's all leading to, and I don't know how you get that information or education out there to them because people have to be willing and aware of, be aware of everything, but they have to be willing to learn and see and do something before we can make any difference.
You know, a good friend of mine, he kind of put an analogy together, and he basically said, just imagine your bride of 2 years, your virgin bride of 2 years, turns out she was a child prostitute for 7 years on her own volition because she liked it. The movies prove it. Now, that's a mind-blowing thing. You know, you go from, I have this pure as snow wife to, oh my God, but the movies prove it. So you can't contest it. You have to accept it. Well, that's where we are today when it comes to military mindset, because they gave their lives. They've dedicated everything to, you know, being a part of the military to protect and serve people in the name of freedom. And our government has always done such a good job in their eyes. Now the truth is coming out that that's really not the case, that we didn't really have to have some of these wars. We chose to have these wars, and the foundation behind them isn't what they told you. In fact, they've created situations so that we could get into the wars in a patriotic way.
I know, you're in my conversations over the last 30 years, as you know, that, you know, when I hit that roadblock personally, I had all of a sudden this awareness of what was going on. I go, wait a minute, we got to stop and think. We got to actually do something. Because when you're red, white, and blue, flag waving and totally involved in it, you don't necessarily see what's happening around you. And once you do, then you have to make a decision.
Okay. You know, I go back to the beginning of this conversation when we were talking about the pro-American rallies at the store and all those flags and 2,000 people waving flags and the patriotism. It was just oozing. So real, and it's like, you know, supporting Bush, and we're contesting these anti-American, anti-capitalist protesters across the street. And you talk about an epiphany. If I knew then what I now know, I would never have worked on those rallies. And I know a lot of people say, oh, we needed to go into Iraq, we need to go into Afghanistan. From what I've seen and learned about our government since I got on, and I've been on the internet now since 2003, so I got 10 years of research, and I retired 5 years ago. And for the last 5 years, I spend hours and hours and hours a day researching things, and I'm a discerning individual. And by the way, I want to promote a couple blog sites. Is that okay?
Yeah, we got only a couple minutes left here, but go ahead and then summarize up for us.
If people want to know what's going on in the world, TreeOfLiberty.com is a phenomenal website, easy to sign up and get on. And if you go to that, you will know before, you'll know what Rush is going to talk about in 2 days because it's already there. Paul Revere Radio is another great one.
Could you spell Paul Revere just like it?
Yeah, if you just Google Paul Revere Radio, I imagine the links will come up.
All right.
And the other one, I think, when it comes to preparedness, for those people who want to become more prepared, is survivalblog.com.
Is what?
Survivalblog.com. That's Mr. Rawls, he wrote the book Patriots. He's the number one blog site in the country or in the world when it comes to preparedness. Like, okay. He took his site down about 3 weeks ago.
So we've got four websites here that you recommend, okay? Obviously, the CEPN.us, that's a Christian Emergency Preparedness Network.us. We got survivalblog.com. We got treeofliberty.com. And we got paulrevereradio.com.
Yep. And to finish out on my train of thought before I took that path, our government is so good at using patriotism to swing the mind. And the best way they can do that is to start a war and have everybody make it us against them. And you have to rally around us. And it works. And it's scary because right now the truth is backing our government into the corner. They've done a lot of things that are bad and wrong. The evidence that, you know, I presented today is 10 times as much, 100 times as much, that validates the things I've said. So they're getting pushed into the corner. So how do you get out? You fight out. And they've set up the whole Middle East. They're the reason that happened. You know, Bill Ayers went to Egypt. He was there the week before they started all their rioting. In fact, they named it the Day of Rage after Bill Ayers' Days of Rage in Chicago in 1969.
Well, we're running out of time here, Mark. Yeah. I'd like to thank you very much, and we need to continue this conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll have the websites up on the archives for you to gather information. Mark, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
And we're going to continue our conversation. God bless America. We need to take action. Thank you, Mark.
Amen. Bye-bye.